Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome ham radios are in Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, my name is Tyler, and I am sitting here on this 184th episode of the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. That is 268 hours of entertainment and maybe frustration for some of you picky people out there. I'm sure there's a couple hours lost in yelling at radios. But I'm here with my good friend and buddy for all 268 hours plus, Mr. Jim Jet Black. Mr. Black, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah. Today's a good day. Lots to do before Moab. So just kind of seeing how the workflow and the schedule is going to be between now and leaving a week from today. No, a week from tomorrow. So I have one extra day than I thought. That's awesome. I have an extra 24 hours.
Well, we're leaving a week from tomorrow of when we're recording, but we're leaving the next day after this episode airs.
Yes, we are. Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what time are we leaving?
Like 4 a.m.
Okay. I'll meet you on the freeway at 4:30.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, our plan as secretary and mine, we're thinking we were going to drive up to just go from here straight up to Reno and get breakfast in Reno.
Okay.
And then
gas up
and then continue on.
Gas fuel is so much cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm only going to put enough fuel in to make it over to Reno. Get to Reno.
Yeah. So yeah, that's our plan. 4 a.m., 4 to 4:30, somewhere around there.
Okay. And,
I did not get a ham radio installed in the Ford. Like I was thinking I was going to. It just completely slipped my mind. I just now thought of it right now because of today's topic for today's episode.
Yeah.
But I've got like 8 handhelds. So between all those and the 16 batteries I have, we should be able to make it.
Right. I need to get that USB charger. That's what I need. Because I have the handheld. I need to get I have the magnetic antenna. I need to get a new lead because mine broke from that little stretch, that little 9 inches of cable or whatever it is. And then I'll just be using the handheld.
Gotcha. In the
truck. So
nice. Yeah, that's my plan too, is just use the handheld because we should be within 2 miles of each other on the freeway most of the time. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Probably
either that, or I'll just leave the ham radio on in Kermit and use it as a
jumper,
a mobile repeater.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
So, if we get separated, I'll jump out of the truck real quick and turn on Kermit's radio and blast 50 watts to get you.
Yeah, and I'll be able to hear you, but I won't be able to
exactly
talk back.
Right. Oh man, maybe we should turn on the APRS beacons too while we're going, and then we can keep track of where we actually are on the map from each other.
I don't think we're gonna get that far separated.
I don't think so either. I'm just nerding out. Okay, let me have my joy, Jimmy.
Okay.
Oh man, so today's episode, Monday yes. fun day, episode 184, as we've already talked about. We have some fun news articles, some fun updates for you guys, and some listener questions relating to
ham
radios.
All systems go.
Woohoo. So a couple questions came in and they were very similar to each other.
Okay.
So I was like, let's just do them both, and we could make a fun little episode out of it.
Nice.
We haven't done a ham radio episode in a while, so I thought this would be interesting. Haven't.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, this month's giveaway for the patrons, the giveaway tier there is a choice. You guys have options. You're not tied into one thing. It's amazing. What are those options, Jimmy?
Yeah, you get, they're both a 90-tooth ratchet set from Gear Wrench. You either have your choice of the 14-piece standards or the 16-piece metrics.
Awesome. I'll take the metrics.
Yeah.
Three. I only need two of them, the 2 of the 14 or 16 pieces anyways.
Oh, 10 and 12.
12 and 14.
12 and 14. Yeah. Oh, you still have your 10.
Well, I get one of those in the gift boxes each time.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I guess we should also say, speaking of gift boxes.
Oh, that's right.
The tier is open.
Woohoo.
We've had 5 or 6 people move up so far.
Wow.
Pretty awesome to see.
Look at you guys go.
We also we're waiting on one item. Mm-hmm. We have everything. I've even ordered the boxes. Mm-hmm. Everything's in line. We're just waiting for one item, which will probably arrive while we're in Moab. Once we get back, we'll package up those boxes and mm-hmm. send them out as soon as we can.
Cool.
So
sounds good. We'll get those boxes out to you guys. And then after about a week or so, week and a half after we send them out, we will let everybody know what's in them.
Yeah. And absolutely.
That'll probably be around the beginning of May, would be my guess.
Probably. I already have ideas for the next gift box.
Nice.
Yep.
Good.
I've been writing them down.
Okay, good. Yeah, we need to start because there's so many times like, oh, that'd be a great idea for the gift box, and we don't write it down. Later on, we're like, hey, what was that idea?
What was that one thing we wanted?
No idea.
Right.
No clue.
I'm excited for this one. I think it's going to be physically smaller than the other ones have been in the past, but it's probably going to have just as much, if not more, bang for your buck stuff in there. So I'm almost going to go on the limb and I'll just say it has a theme somewhat behind it.
Okay.
I won't say what it is, but I think that there's an overall arcing theme to this box, and that's what gave me the idea for the next month's box, or the next 6 months box.
Are we going to do banana hammock boxes?
No.
Oh. Okay. No.
And we weren't able to work it out in time. It would have been, the timing of everything would have been way off, and unfortunately, we did not add the B. Murphy's artwork on it this time.
Super producer Murphy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. That'll be next time.
Yep.
We'll get it in next time. We dropped the ball. We're too busy, too much stuff going on. So make it a priority next time. You guys are going to get plain Jane boxes this time, but what's in the boxes are pretty awesome. So.
Yes.
Why are we doing a giveaway for tools this month in April?
Got it. Yeah, we're doing that giveaway for the Gear Wrench 90 Tooths because we have them available on the Snail Trail website, snailtrail.com.
Snailtrail4x4.com.
Yeah, probably don't go to that other one.
Yeah, don't go to snailtrail.com. Yeah.
Snailtrail4x4.com. It's probably /shop/gearwrench. I don't know. I'm not sure what
something like that, I think. Yeah. Maybe it's like shop product categories, Gear Wrench, maybe. Yeah. Something like that.
Anyways, if you just go on to the website and click the shop button, there'll be a drop-down menu for you, and Gear Wrench options are right there. If you just hit the shop button, they'll probably be one of the first things that pop up because it was one of the most recent things added.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, you want to attack that. We also, underneath that shop button, have Morflates. It'll direct you over to the Morflate website.
Nice.
I think you did that.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Totally forgot about that.
And Snail Armor is underneath there. That will bring you to the Snail Armor website. So we got the Snail Trail merch, Gear Wrench, Snail Armor, and Morflates underneath the shop. So.
Awesome. That's a fun little added thing to the show and the channel, the Snail Trail 4x4 channel. Mm-hmm. Another fun thing that might get added here is we had a listener after our 10 episodes of Give Back to the Off-Road Industry, 170 through 180, right?
Yeah.
One listener came up to us, and he is actually on the Recreational Action Committee for El Dorado County.
Okay.
So what they do is it's a conglomerate of people representing different interests for El Dorado County. He is the off-roading interest.
Oh, wow.
For that council.
Cool.
So they get together and they recommend
I know this person?
I know you know of him. I don't know if you've actually met him, though.
Okay.
Chris from the Gold Hills Posse.
Oh, yeah. I know of him.
Yeah, so super cool guy, extremely smart, brilliant guy, with a lot of passion for giving back and taking care of our trails that we use for off-roading.
Yes.
And so he's the perfect guy to have in that position on that committee. And he reached out and said, hey, here's a grant form. Here's how to fill out the grant form. And here's an idea that you guys could do. And on the behalf of, you know, Snail Trail 4x4 or Morflate or Snail Armor or whatever else we want to get involved with, in terms of creating essentially our own trasheroos.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the idea is to create not wag bags. That's different. I keep calling them wag bags because they sit on the back of your vehicle and wag around. But it's more like a Trasheroo style, where it's a trash bag that sits on the exterior of your vehicle, usually off a spare tire on the rear.
Yeah. But it's not like a canvas bag setup, is it?
We haven't decided on materials.
Okay.
So that's what I gotta figure all this out. But the idea is that we are going to be applying for a grant.
Yes.
To have trash bags made for vehicles, and we're going to be able to hand them out hopefully free of charge.
Yes.
Which would be awesome. So we are putting our expression. We're putting foot to ground.
Hands to trail
on, hey, that's a good name for it. Hands on trail. Hands on trail. I don't know. Anyways, we are putting our words to action of what we talked about, all 170 through 180. And we're going to be creating some trash bags, get some grant funding for it, and hopefully give more reason for people to pick up other people's trash while they're out on the trails, while they're off-roading and enjoying off-road recreation.
Yeah, I think this is really awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad that things seem to be aligning and things seem to be working out. And I think this is a great thing that we're going to be able to provide to people to help maintain and clean up on our trails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be very similar. We got the inspiration from the Respect the Bush campaign that goes on in Australia. And we got one of the bags from our good buddy Charles and Aaron.
Yep.
Who were not very nice to us on the Wheeling Wine and Whiskey review. Just FYI. I don't know if you listened to that.
I don't. Their most recent one?
I don't know. They left a review for Wheeling Wine and Whiskey, and in it was an acronym that was like TNTF or something, or TGNF. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Essentially, it was something along the lines of, thank God you're not fucking Wheeling or not Snail Trail 4x4.
Oh, is that what it stands for? Yes. Oh, okay.
It made me laugh. I'll put it that way. But
I was kidding. They put that on one of the flasks.
Yes, that's what it was. It was on their flask, and they also put it on a review, I think.
Oh, that's funny.
On their iTunes reviews. So, it was funny.
If I knew that, I would not have sent that flask.
Right? I was like, I didn't know what it meant either. Anyways, the Respect the Bush campaign, we've kind of been wanting to do this for a while, ever since we saw that. And now, thanks to Chris, I think we're going to be able to have the means to do this.
Yes.
So we'll look for that to come forward. We haven't submitted the grant yet. We only have a few more days to do it. We need to do it before we go to Moab. But I think that Austin from iRate 4x4 is also going to be getting in on the action with us.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
So it'll be really neat.
Wheeling Wine and Whiskey to get in on this?
Or? I put the offer out to them, and I've heard crickets from them so far about it.
Okay.
So by the time you listen to this episode, it'll be too late. So hopefully they're getting my emails that I've sent them and my texts I've sent them. I'm not going to ask them any more times. I'm not going to try and push people.
Yeah.
So, that'll be really cool. If that goes through and we're awarded the grant, we'll be able to make our own Trasheroos with Morflate, Snail Trail 4x4, Snail Armor, and iRate 4x4 all on them.
That's cool.
Which will be really neat.
Yeah.
And free of charge, which will be even better, which will be really cool.
And it would be nice to be able to hand those out to people and see how much trash they can pick up. Maybe we can do something on the flip side of rewarding people that send in Instagram photos or something of trash they've collected.
Yeah. I don't know what the terms of the grant are going to be, because it's technically an El Dorado County grant for recreation in El Dorado County.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, you know, like 100% of the bags have to be used in El Dorado County, dispersed in El Dorado County, or if there's going to be some kind of stipulation, like a majority of them, 51% has to be dispersed in El Dorado County. The other 49 can be wherever we want them to be. So we'll have to figure out what the stipulations of the grant are. But once we get all that figured out, we'll be able to start distributing and get those out there.
And we'll let everybody know.
Exactly. Another fun topic, I'm partnering with Friends of Fordyce.
Okay.
And we are working with Tahoe National Forest to put in a repeater to cover Meadow Lake and Fordyce Trail.
Nice.
So
we've seen some of that action on your Instagram.
Yep. So that should be a lot of fun. That's going to need a lot of hands to come together very quickly in a very short amount of time. depending on the response from Tahoe National Forest in order to get the site permitted.
Okay.
So I submitted a couple of different site plans in terms of how the ground really is going to get impacted by this radio site being put up. But I think we were able to put into two ideas that are pretty minimal in terms of intrusion to the land that I'm hoping can get okayed. The Tahoe National Forest, the recreational side of Tahoe National Forest, they're totally on board. They're like, yeah, this is great. We would like to have more stable communications in the area for people recreating. Because mm-hmm. right now, pretty much the only communications there are people who have AT&T.
Right.
That's kind of it. So we're looking at having
Verizon
a better...
Verizon works pretty good.
It's decent, but that AT&T cell tower is right on Signal Peak. So it's okay. Like,
yeah.
If you have anything else, Verizon's kind of spotty here and there, and then T-Mobile is nothing.
Yeah.
And so the cool thing about the system is I've talked with my father-in-law and Frank Yost, mm-hmm. and they're both on board with helping us set up the equipment for the radios themselves.
Nice.
And we're going to be able to link it to the 805 system.
Ooh.
Hopefully. We have to get up to the repeater site, or I need to run mapping from the repeater site to see if we can hit the link site from the repeater site. I think we can.
Whereabouts is the link?
The link is good question. I would have to hit one of the, I think he's got a couple voting receivers for the link. So I have to hit one of them.
Yeah.
So I would imagine the one we'd be able to hit from there would be Bald Mountain outside of Georgetown.
Okay.
But we'll see.
That's a stretch.
It's a stretch, but it's totally doable on UHF line of sight. As long as we have line of sight, it should be no problem.
Yeah.
But we got to have line of sight. So we'll see if that works out. I think we can, because I can reach and hit the 805 from like a couple of places in Meadow Lake.
Okay. Well, then, that's probably doable.
It should be doable. So we just got to actually do it and make sure it's possible.
Nice.
But yeah, that'll be really cool to expand that system
and
build a repeater out in that area. We're guessing it's going to take about $10,000.
Wow. That's not as much as I expected.
No, it's really not. Considering that we're going to have to build an entire new building.
Yep.
We're going to have to put down a foundation for it. We're going to have to get the engineering reports for the site permit. We're going to have to, I really hope we don't have to do a environmental analysis in EA. That would suck.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need a tower, mast, antenna system, guy wires. We're going to need power. So solar panels, we're planning on 400 watt solar panels. Two 200 watt solar panels running into a few batteries.
Okay.
To run the whole system and then the radios themselves and the control unit and being able to link and do all this other stuff. So I'm guesstimating about $10,000 for everything, the whole project.
That's crazy.
So Friends of Fordyce will be funneling the funds and kind of in charge of the funds because they're a 501c3.
Okay.
They're a nonprofit, so they'll be able to do that. Anybody who donates to the project will be able to write it off on their taxes.
Cool.
Which will be super awesome. And we've already had a lot of other organizations, some businesses, and a lot of individuals and clubs, off-roading clubs, that have already stepped up and said, yeah, we'll donate $500, $1,000, etc. So
sweet.
We'll officially start kicking that off once we hear that the permit is going to be okayed.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get, that's kind of, everything's hinging on the site permit right now. Once the site permit is good, then, we'll be able to move forward full blast. And the goal is to try and get it set up by Sierra Trek this year,
oof,
which is going to be really, really, really rough to do.
That's a fast turn.
It's a very, very fast turnaround, especially when you're talking about site permits.
Well, yeah, the logistics of the government.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So the cool thing is Tahoe National Forest is like super on board. They're all for it. So I'm hoping that they'll be able to help expedite the site permit process. Sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's going to be much needed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's very little communication up that valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be great. I mean, to be able to have communications from the bottom to the top mm-hmm. on a radio is mm-hmm. going to be a really good thing to have.
I agree. So it'll be really cool. So that's a radio update.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of reviews for people. So we can do a couple more of these real quick. First one's from Foghorn Leghorn.
Nice.
Foghorn Leghorn. He says, good stuff. Looking forward to bumping into you guys on the trail this year. I'm constantly daydreaming or talking 24/7 of going wheeling. So listening to Snail Trail makes my long drives to and from work feel like I'm on my way to the trail instead.
Nice.
That's cool. That was a really neat one. We're always looking for people that are kind of like us and that we're always thinking about off-roading or doing something outdoors. So the next one is from Fergie Fab.
Fergie Fab.
Our first patron ever.
Was he?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know.
That's why Fergie. That. That's why Fergie Fab's at the bottom of the list every time we do the giveaway.
Is it? Yeah. That's the reason?
Yep.
Okay.
So Fergie Fab said, great podcast, great info on wheeling and fabrication. I don't know about that. Lots of Toyota talk too, if that's what you're into. Glad the Ford trash talk is less nowadays since they both own Fords now too.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm trash talking Fords pretty hard right now after the stupid oil change.
Right.
Yeah.
He probably wrote that before the last last Monday episode too.
Probably.
He might have been right there next to Jason, just both hands over the air going, yes.
Yeah. So that's the reviews for today. We have a few more to get through. We'll get through those in future episodes. If you guys want a chance at winning a winch, we are giving away a winch once we hit 500 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you're leaving those reviews over on iTunes. If you can find ways to do multiple reviews, awesome. The whole point of this is A, we love hearing from you guys. B, some of these things are hilarious and I love reading them. They crack us up. And C, the more reviews you have, the more that iTunes and other podcasting platforms, not just iTunes, will actually serve your podcast out to people when they search key terms like 4x4 or off-road or four-wheel drive. So the reviews are one of the number one ways that podcast search platforms, like kind of like think of Google, but for podcast, it ranks you. Mm-hmm. So yep. Get more of those reviews in there. If you do, you get a chance at winning a winch.
Yes. That's so. A awesome, awesome deal.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Tyler, for donating a winch.
Yeah, anytime. I originally bought it to be a rear winch, and I'm just like, it's so hard. A, it's really difficult to set up a rear winch on an SUV, and B, since I put my dual battery setup right there, I can't fit a rear winch there anymore.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm probably not going to use it.
Put it on the front of the Ford.
That's true. I could put it on the Ford. There is a ton of space there in that bumper to put a winch. So, whatever. It'll go to good use here. Let's see. What else do we got? I have a list here for everybody. Oh, Oceana Dunes.
Yes.
So now we're going to start getting into today's main topic. So let's get in there and we'll touch on Oceana Dunes really quick before getting into the other stuff. So go ahead and grab your lattes. Jason said in his voicemail to Jimmy, if you are getting married soon, sometime in the next near future, you should probably look at getting a JL and a latte maker. It'll go over really, really well to get the missus out on the trail and to make sure that they have ways to pee, as we learned from episodes 50 and 52 from the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. And with that, my friends, we will be right on back with today's main topic. Grab your drinks, grab your favorite adult beverages. Unless you're driving, then grab your favorite Kool-Aid or Capri Sun if you're Danny. And we'll be right on back with today's main topics. Welcome back, ladies and germs, to today's main topic. Today is a Monday episode, episode 184. It's even Monday.
Yes.
It's almost like we planned it that way. That's amazing, right?
I know.
I remember when we originally set it up to that way, we were having so much trouble figuring that out. Oh, man. Anyways, so we've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
I just realized I had one of those moments where, man, that was a really long time ago. And yeah, we've been doing it for a while. And we're still cranking out two episodes a week.
I know, that's nuts.
I don't know how long we're going to keep doing it, but we're going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So you guys are stuck with us.
We don't.
Sorry.
don't seem like stopping anytime soon.
I don't think so.
No.
Where I'm actually debating on making one of the offices in the Morphlight warehouse into a studio.
Yeah.
So with kind of like with couches, like a green room studio kind of thing.
That'd be cool.
So I think it'd be kind of fun. My inspiration is Dax Shepard, just FYI.
Yeah.
And his show.
Which we still want to get on our show.
Yeah. So if anybody knows Dax, keep tagging him and keep tagging us in all of his posts so that he knows that we're looking for him to get him on our show. And we can fly him out on the Snail Trail jet to hang out. From Tyson. Thank you, Tyson, for loaning us that, by the way. And we'll get him out in the studio and have a good time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Real quick, before we get into the main topic, I forgot to mention this. This is something that showed up on my door, and I was trying to figure out who it was from before I opened it. Can you read that, what that says there?
Douche McDouche.
Yeah, that's who it's to, apparently. There's no from label, no from address.
Uh-uh.
But that's who it's to, Douche McDouche.
You want me to look inside?
Sure. So I'm going to see if you can guess who it is, who sent it.
It's a stuffed bottle of Furball. Which looks like a fireball.
Yeah. It's a fireball dog chew toy in a stuffed bottle dog chew toy fireball labeled to Douche McDouche.
Douche McDouche.
Who do you think it's from?
I would highly guess Sherpa.
Ding, 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 ding. So I got
super funny.
I got a text from him saying a birthday present was on my way. And then that showed up in a couple of days. And I just read Douche McDouche, and I was like, dang it, Sherpa. And then I opened it, and I was like, thank you, Sherpa.
That's funny.
So, anyways, thank you. Now back to the important stuff.
All right.
Here, the real reason why we are here today, talking and discussing and communicating, is a couple of news articles.
Yes.
So, one is one about Oceana Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you remember where we kind of left off about Oceana Dunes, and one of the last things I said. One of the last things I said was, this is not about the snowy plover.
Yes.
It's not about sand pollution.
Right. It's about getting real estate or controlling the land so that they can start evolving it and building resorts and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So that I said that, God, 5, 6, 7 weeks ago, somewhere around that range.
Yep.
A news article came out about a week ago now. And in that news article, it talks about two nonprofit organizations down in that area at Oceano that are gearing up for the next couple of years coming and what's coming for Oceana Dunes. One of them is about Friends of Oceana Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And they have submitted 4 lawsuits against the state, essentially in state parks, to say, no, you can't be doing this. You can't be shutting down this off-road recreation opportunity. The other nonprofit organization that's gearing up to do some stuff down there is the newly founded Oceano Economic Development Council.
Awesome.
Newly founded.
Newly founded.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Apparently, it is a group of locals to Oceano that have been meeting for a while and just recently decided to make it official and create a nonprofit organization out of their group meetings. They are it's a nonprofit founded just this February, but the group of locals have been meeting for several years, and their goal is to support and create and plan for equitable economic development in Oceano.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yay.
So let's talk a little bit about what their plans are here. Okay. Keep in mind what I said about 6, 7 weeks ago, right?
Sure.
Okay, so it says, as of July 1st, 2022, Pier Avenue will be shut down, says Charles Varney, co-founder of the Oceano Economic Development Council. We are positioning ourselves to have some community meetings on what kinds of things people would like to see in that reconstruction down there.
Okay, what reconstruction?
Exactly, right?
Yeah,
nowhere they're shutting it all down.
Yeah.
Why is there reconstruction being planned?
Right.
So it says the council is working closely with Cal Poly's Departments of Business and City Regional Planning on some conceptual plans for Pier Avenue and redevelopments of airport land and Oceano's Front Street area. Varney says the Coastal Commission's decision to have a vehicle-free beach south of Pier Avenue will finally allow Oceano to thrive as a destination site for tourists, generating more businesses and jobs. There will be a transition to this new sort of economic basis, but we've seen that happen right next door with Pismo Beach, where 30 years ago they decided not to have vehicles on the beach anymore, Varney said. So, how does that make you feel?
You magnificent bastard. I salute you.
Did I call it or did I call it?
Yeah.
Fucking A, man.
Yeah, let's close down the beach from people recreating and having a good time, and let's open it up so that more we can develop it more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Told you, 100%. Never been about the fucking bird. Never been about the fucking sand pollution. No. It's about the economic development opportunities and taking over that area, that land, to make it more like Pismo Beach, which is verbatim, almost verbatim, exactly what I said.
Yes. That's ridiculous. It's just rude on many levels of, like, you're removing things that people enjoy and aren't hurting the environment at all.
Nope.
And you are stopping that so that other people can benefit from the land and build resorts and buildings and shopping centers closer to the ocean so that other people can make more money and remove the fun for, or remove the avenue of fun for others.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. So I'm pissed.
Yeah.
So thank you, Chris, for sending that to us. I almost exploded. Like, I almost wrote this big, long essay back in that text thread. And I was like, why am I doing this? We're all on the same page here. We're going to talk about it on the podcast instead. So anyways, I'm fucking pissed. It's bullshit. Their true colors are showing right now, right then and there.
In a matter of weeks.
Literally, I thought it was going to take longer. I was thinking this wouldn't come out. Something like this wouldn't come out until 2022 when everything shut down. And then they would start planning on it. No, they're already putting in the plans.
Right. You're already moving forward on removing the birds completely. And, you know, covering the dunes with buildings and structures. You know, and removing that environment where at least when the wheelers and, sand people were out there.
The sand people?
Yeah. Now I'm only thinking of the Star Wars guys.
I immediately thought of somebody sitting up on a hill going, and shooting pod racers.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue.
At least that land was open and available for the wildlife.
Yeah. Yeah. Not going to be anymore. Just FY. Mark my words. I'm saying it again here. That land is not going to be available and open to wildlife in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Guarantee it.
I wish we could just turn the same thing around on them and say, like, you can't involve this. The snowy plover's there.
Yeah, right? Fuck you guys.
Yeah, this is the whole reason that we aren't allowed on the beach, and you're not allowed on the beach for the same damn reason.
I don't know. I'm people know where I stand. I'm just going to get worked up here before talking about ham radios, which is something I want to enjoy.
Well, that's why we brought this one up first.
Yes.
So that now you can calm yourself down and talk about sinusoidal waves.
Right. No. And so this is, we alluded to it in the, that I alluded to in the end of last podcast, last Thursday's episode. The more and more that we just take money out of the off-road industry, the more that shit like this is going to happen. We're not going to have the funds to fight assholes like this.
Right. Absolutely.
And so this is one of the main reasons after this article came out, I'm seriously, seriously considering with Morflate not giving and supporting off-roading events if the donations that I'm donating for, some of it is not going back to off-road organizations.
Yeah. I think that's a value or something that's something good to stand for, right? I mean,
I feel bad because then it's like, well, no, you're not supporting veterans and children's hospitals, which is not the case. I still think funds should be going. I want some of the portions from these raffles, from these giveaways. These raffles generate $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 per raffle.
Sometimes, yeah.
Like, some of that needs to go back into our off-roading organizations.
Absolutely.
To stop shitheads like this from doing this.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, when we did our Snail Trail meetup, we did a portion of the beer sales went to Corva.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, and there's not, it's not it's not unreasonable to ask for them to give back to the four-wheel drive community. Mm-hmm. Like, the people that are coming out there and supporting you mm-hmm. are in the four-wheel drive community. Mm-hmm. Why are you not giving back to that community?
Right?
Like, I am, once again, like, I think both of us stand where, like, everything, everywhere, all these organizations, you know, from veterans to Shriners Hospital, mm-hmm. you know, to the Make-A-Wish Foundation to, mm-hmm. you know, to Corva and Cal 4, everybody needs donations.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if you're not supporting the people that are supporting you, mm-hmm. what's the point?
Yeah, I agree. So anyways, that's the drop the ball, drop the mic mm-hmm. announcement. So anyways, I need to calm down here. Let's talk about some ham radio stuff.
Let's do it.
Oh, cool. You could be in a freak show.
I'm totally in a freak show right now, just FYI. So we had a couple of things, and this is going to lead into ham radios, because I think this is really cool, and this could lead into a bunch of stuff, but it can also lead into ham radio repeater setups
okay.
as well. There is a company in the Bay Area. They're kind of a startup. They have found a way to take nuclear waste, so nuclear graphite, essentially.
Okay.
So it's a...
radioactive.
Radioactive, thank you. Radioactive graphite that's been used in nuclear applications. It's now nuclear waste. So it's giving off essentially a lot of electrons.
Okay.
Energy, right? This waste is giving off a lot of electrons that can be potentially dangerous in large doses to human beings. So they have to find somewhere to keep it, somewhere to put it, somewhere to do something to do with it. The cool thing about this is, as it's emitting electrons, that's electricity that we could be using. Some company, a startup in the Bay Area, has found a way to take radioactive graphite, encase it in diamond, industrial diamonds.
Okay.
Which is a very, very dense, hard structure, which then makes the radioactive material safe to be handled by humans and create a way to harness the electrons being emitted by this radioactive graphite and use it as an energy source.
Wow.
Essentially creating a battery that has a half-life of 28,000 years.
That's nuts.
So a battery that keeps recharging itself.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's wow.
Right?
Now that's like, now it's, yeah.
My head just exploded, right?
Yeah.
So I have ever since I was super into physics in
high
school. I
really feel like I'm in the future now.
Yes, exactly. No, it's, you think about the Jetsons. You think about Back to the Future. Yes. Back to the Future, right? They put a fusion reactor on a car. And ever since then, I'm like, what would it, I mean, fission reactors break down stuff.
Mm, okay.
Fusion reactors combine stuff to make things give off energy, right?
Okay.
So fusion reaction doesn't give off as much nuclear waste as fission does.
Sure.
But ever since I've kind of learned about the benefits of fusion reactors, the problem with fusion is that it's much harder to control a fusion reaction and keep it from destroying everything.
Right.
So I'm creating a chain reaction from fusion. So I've always been like, man, can you imagine if we got to the point where we can control a fusion reaction so well that we could create fusion reactor batteries, essentially.
Yeah.
And everybody could have their own little fusion reactor to power their car.
Yes.
Well, and then your car would never, ever again need to be refilled on gas. It would never be refilled on battery electricity.
Yep.
You would have your own little fusion reactor in your car.
Yeah. And it would regenerate itself,
and right?
Continue to move.
Yeah. This is essentially
that
same function as having a little mini tiny fusion reactor.
How much power does it create? Do we know?
That's a good question.
Okay.
So that I wasn't able to figure that out from the two articles I saw. I just cruised through on my Google thing because Google knows I'm a nerd, right? And so I was like, interesting. It's a battery that lasts 28,000 years. Like, what is this? And so I looked it up, and yeah, it's really apparently you need a lot of them in order to run high enough voltage to power things.
Okay.
But they're really, really low voltage applications currently.
Yeah.
but the concept is there.
Right. No, that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of things that use a low voltage mm-hmm. that you don't need a lot of power for. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty cool in itself. Mm-hmm. You know, think about the first thing that sort of came to mind was like smoke detectors.
Yeah, smoke detectors is a good one.
They take a 9-volt, mm-hmm. but they don't use a lot of power when they're sitting there and just detecting
every 8 to 10 years, you swap out a 9-volt on those.
But if you added one of these in there, it'd be forever. Mm-hmm. It would never need it.
Essentially,
the question would be is if there does detect the smoke, would it be enough power to sound the alarm?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it'd be really cool to have a something like that that would never really run out of batteries and doesn't require a lot of power just to sense. Maybe mm-hmm. it just has a little power, you know, another extra battery at this point that mm-hmm. for when it needs to sound out the alarm. That's mm-hmm. It's just really cool.
Yeah. So essentially their thoughts of it their immediate thoughts are, and this is taken from the article, the product is supposed to come in two versions, mm-hmm. the quote unquote forever version that is supposed to last 28,000 years, mm-hmm. which is really, it can last longer than that. They're just throwing it out there because like,
yeah,
once you're at 20,000, like, do you really need to know that it can go 30,000 years before it runs out of charge? This hardcore version is meant for niche applications, such as deep space travel, where it could power instruments onboard spacecrafts and satellites.
Interesting.
These spacecraft, for instance, could be sent to other star systems on century-long voyages, and they would still have enough power to beam back communications.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what they're thinking of, right?
That's crazy.
And then they said there is also a consumer version meant for powering electric vehicles, smartphones, and other small devices. Mm-hmm. Since the graphite would be wrapped in multiple coatings of synthetic diamond, there would be no radiation leaking out of your phone. NDB, the company, even claims that the radiation levels emitted by the cells will be less than those emitted by the human body.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Can you imagine sitting there?
Never needing to charge your cell phone.
Never need to charge your cell phone again. Never need to charge your car again. Refill your car. It has a built-in power generator.
What I also really like about this, and sorry if I'm cutting you a little short on what you were.
No, go for it.
Is that we're kind of finding a way to recycle things that we thought were waste.
Exactly. And that's one of the big impacts of this technology as well, mm-hmm. is that we have a ton of nuclear waste sitting out in like the Nevada desert somewhere.
Right. We'll wave to it as we're on our way to Moab. Right.
Yeah. We'll have the Geiger counters on while we're going. And it's like being able to now take that and turn that really, really harmful stuff into something that's productive and really helpful.
Yeah.
Exactly. Pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like somebody saying that, you know, hey, we've got a solution for plastic, and mm-hmm. now you never need plastic again. And it uses all the plastic that was available.
Yeah.
And now we can recycle it one way or another. Yeah.
Tennis courts. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Well, how about, I mean, even a lot of the AstroTurf soccer fields and mm-hmm. AstroTurf football fields that mm-hmm. have very small rubberized pellets mm-hmm. from tires and shoes.
Yep.
You know, it's like people are getting very inventive these days. And I think that's necessary.
Absolutely.
I don't want to go too far out on a bird walk, but if anybody's read The Moat in God's Eye, and with the Modis and how they get trapped in a solar system and never figure out how to get out of it, and uh-huh. they end up using all the resources in that solar system, then they had to figure out how to recycle everything. Uh-huh. Everything, like they would have cars that they would take apart really easy and fast and then use it to build a bookcase, you know, or something. Uh-huh. But that book really opened my eyes to the thought of like trying to mm-hmm. reuse everything that you use, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And whatever you have left over, figure out a purpose for it.
Yeah.
Because we really shouldn't be creating waste.
Yeah. Right. Waste that you cannot get rid of ever mm-hmm. is not a good thing, typically.
And I can preach that, you know, but I do still have a garbage at my house and do throw things out. But,
right.
But yeah, that battery thing's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really neat. It's
whenever that actually happens and comes out to production. So
they were supposed to be able, and they were supposed to make a prototype of it and to have the proof of concept, the physical proof of concept in their hands last year.
Okay.
But then COVID happened.
Oh, okay.
So now they've had to push back the timeline. So by 2023, they said they will have multiple proof of concept physical things in their hands.
Wow. All right.
That'll be operational. So I'm going to be, this is something I'm going to be watching extremely closely to see A, if they can pull it off to the level that they're talking about.
Yeah.
And B, what kind of voltages per, you know, size of battery, size of, I don't even know what you would call it, a diamond battery, they're calling it. What the size is, you know, can you do a 12 volt system, but like the battery is the size of a refrigerator?
Yeah. What, and like how fast does it, like, do you drain it or does it need to charge back up? You know, there's a lot of open-ended questions. Mm-hmm.
Here. Yeah. They did make one claim. Well, let me see if I can find it here. Like,
would you be able to drive a car forever on the battery, or how big would that battery need to be? So, because it would need to be recharging itself as it's draining, you know, so forever and be in this flow motion. And yeah, so it's interesting. I wonder how well it's going to work in the end.
Yeah, I'm really curious too. They say that in reference, one of the owners of the company, NDB, Nano Diamond Batteries, is saying, think of it as an iPhone. Think of it in an iPhone with the same size battery we currently have.
Can we what do they do? Brackets when you change something in a quote?
Oh, yeah.
And change that to Android.
Yeah, Android. There you go. Think of it as your Android phone with the same size battery. It would charge your battery from zero to full 5 times an hour.
Wow.
That's their claim for reference point.
Yeah, and I don't think... I would be shocked to find anybody that can take their phone from full to empty in an hour.
No. Yeah. It's maybe Steve and Ian with all their TikToking, but
yeah.
No. So I thought this was super freaking cool. I'm like, the concept is almost what I've been dreaming of since high school. Waiting for someone to do, right? Yeah. ever since watching Back to the Future and putting a fusion reactor on a car, right? So it's
you just liked the 85 pickup.
Yeah, that's true too.
Was it 86? Oh my gosh.
It was, I think it was an IFS. I think it's an 86.
It was an 86, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, it's I think it's phenomenal, and I'm really curious to see if it lives up to what they're saying the claims are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully it does, because that would be phenomenal. Mm-hmm.
And the other benefit then is that we can put it into repeater systems for ham radios and have off-grid communications.
And don't need the solar power.
Never need any other sort of power. Yep.
The batteries would be batteries and they just sit there.
Cell phone towers would never go down in natural disasters.
Yep.
We'd always have cell phone communications, always have radio communications in natural disasters. Mm-hmm. So if the power grid goes down, you've got these to run everything.
And you would never need to charge your cell phone.
I mean, it's a...
We would have houses that would just run off of batteries.
Right?
So cool. We could get rid of all those nasty, ugly-looking power lines that go around the world.
We could take down all the power lines everywhere. Yeah. So anyways, it's super freaking cool.
So I'm getting solar at my house installed right now.
Yeah.
Right? We're probably getting enough solar on the house that it's going to run itself. And for the most part, I'm never going to need electricity for them. You know, there's no battery. So I probably, you know, I'll need it at night, and we're not storing it, but whatever. But regardless, they still leave the meter on your house and you still have to pay to have the meter on your house.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I have PG&E and PG&E like, nope, $15 a month. You pay for that meter.
Yep.
Whether you use it or not.
Yep.
You're still, yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm like, well, I don't need it. You know, it's like, I mean, right now I do, but if we installed batteries and...
If you installed like a couple of Tesla house batteries, then you could cut out your PG&E meter and be like, fuck you guys.
Nope. Get out here. It's required to have it on the house.
By law?
I think so.
Interesting.
There's something there that's if you build a house from scratch and like off the grid scenario, they still want to put meters on your house.
Interesting. That sounds to me like a corporatocracy kind of thing going on there. Yeah.
Even if you use zero, you're still paying for that meter on your house.
Interesting. All right. Well,
it's something California stupid. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something there. But anyways, moving on. That's not this topic.
So we're going to get into some ham radios.
Okay.
We got a couple of emails from people asking some questions about radios.
And I appreciate you guys not messaging me and asking
me. He just forwards them to me anyways. Yeah. So this one says, from Alex.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Alex. He says, hey, guys, love the podcast, and I recently got my technician license thanks to Ham Radio Prep, which is awesome. Cool. Those guys are pretty good. They're really good at what they do over there. I highly recommend people to go check them out. There's a discount code over at myoffroadradio.com. So get that discount code and then go to Ham Radio Prep and get a discount on the classes and have a good time. He says, I'm looking at getting my first mobile radio to install in my 4Runner. I was looking at a Yaesu FTM 400.
Ah,
which Jimmy knows about. Jimmy will be able to answer this question for us.
Maybe.
But all the prices I'm seeing are about $560.
Yep.
Because he missed that year where they were running these massive sales. I had heard you talk about the ICOM IC2730, which is the radio I have in Kermit, one of the radios, in past episodes. It's only $250. My question is the Yaesu FTM 400 really worth over double the price of the ICOM? I would like to have the APRS capability, and I can usually justify most things under my buy once, cry once motto, but $560 seems like too much for a first mobile radio. I'd really appreciate your input.
My first thought on this is your radio, there's flashy bells and whistles with the Yaesu.
Correct.
No, well, which one? The FTM 400.
Yours, yeah.
It's a big screen. Mm-hmm. It's a touch, it's not a touch screen. It is a touch screen. Mm-hmm. It's a touch screen. You know, there's a lot that goes on that screen. And there's fewer buttons, you know, and I know where Tyler's going to talk about here, so I'll leave that at B for a little bit. But I think that's one of the biggest differences is that the screen and the visual side of things is much more grand with the FTM 400.
It's prettier to look at sure. Mm-hmm. In terms of that aspect of being able to look at the radio and see exactly what it's doing on a quick glimpse. Mm-hmm. I think both of those radios are about tied. The ICOM has a very high contrast radio. It lights up kind of white in the background and has this really big dark numbers that cover the screen. The screen's kind of split in two sides and it's very easy to tell which frequency you're receiving a signal on, which one you're transmitting on, what's going on with the radio. It's very easy to tell that a quick glimpse because it's a really nice contrast screen with big numbers and on it. The Yaesu is a color LCD screen. So it's prettier to look at, and there's more colors into it. There's not just a two-tone screen. I don't like for off-roading and crawling that it's touchscreen,
right?
The Yaesu.
You don't.
But I play with my radios constantly when I'm off-roading.
Yes.
And then Jimmy doesn't. He sets his radio, and it's good for the trip. He's good to go. He doesn't need to mess around with it. So if you're in that kind of aspect, then touchscreen works great. It is a bigger screen overall. Mm-hmm. I think there's more square inch spacage on it than the ICOM.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to the price, and this is something I wanted to hit on for Alex, the price of the Yaesu FT400 is $560. The price of the ICOM by itself is $250. There's some hidden costs there with the ICOM that you're not seeing.
Okay.
ICOM does not include the brackets with the radio. So if you want to set up the radio itself on a bracket so it's secured in your vehicle and not just kind of sloshing around wherever you put it, that's going to be another $50.
Sure.
That bracket. If you want a bracket for the faceplate to mount the faceplate on your dashboard separate of your radio, that's another $50. If you want a longer microphone cable to go somewhere, which you have to pay, I think, for the Yaesu as well. We had to do that, right?
Yeah, but I think it would also depend on where you put the main body, the main computer. Mm-hmm. Because I put it behind and underneath the bench in Bobcat. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's far away from the head unit as almost you can get.
Yeah.
Because the main body is on the floor, behind the seat, underneath the seat, in the back, and the head unit is on the ceiling, on the top, in the front, in the middle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I needed a longer... I needed a longer extension of the mic, but if I would have put the main unit like somewhere in the dash, I might have been able to get away with not having it.
Correct. The other nice thing about the ICOM is that you can put the microphone into the head unit
yep.
or the radio body itself, yeah. either one.
And you can't do that.
You cannot do that with the
yep.
Yaesu.
Yep.
You have to go into the radio body. Yes. So if you're going to plant the radio body somewhere in the back of the vehicle, out of sight, out of mind, it's going to be less risk of people knowing you have a ham radio in there to steal it. You're going to need an extra microphone cable. Mm-hmm. And but which is only like $10, $12 on Amazon. Other than that, I want to say there was a couple of other hidden costs with the ICOM, but I can't remember what they are off the top of my head.
How's the microphone, the speaker?
The speaker on the ICOM is great.
Okay,
if you have the radio
near
you, mm-hmm. if you plant it away in the back of the vehicle somewhere, out of mind, out of sight, you're going to need an external speaker.
Yep. That's the same on the Yaesu.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, if you drive an open top vehicle, you will need an external speaker no matter what. There's no way to really, I mean, I guess you could mount, if you have like a Jeep and you have a roll cage over the top of your head, you can mount the radio from your roll cage.
Yeah.
And it would work fine that way. But driving down the freeway with mud tires and open tops, or you keep your windows open, or you have no doors or something, you're going to want probably an external speaker, mm-hmm. which again is $15-$20.
And both platforms.
And both of them will need it. Plan, if you're getting that ICOM, I love that radio as an off-roading radio. But it doesn't have, you plan on spending about $400 all said and done for that radio. There's extra cost than just the $250 you're seeing. So plan on spending about $400, $350 to $400 for that radio. Now,
does it do APRS?
It does not.
Okay.
So that's the other thing. The Yaesu is, in literally, in my opinion, all in for a complete function radio that does everything. I don't think you can beat the Yaesu. Now, there is a new radio out that I'm really happy with called the Vero VRN7500. And we're going to talk about that one next. But in terms of these two radios, I love that ICOM radio. It just does not do APRS. And once you take into account the hidden costs of that radio, you're looking at $350 to $400. And there's another radio out there called the TYT7800 that does everything the ICOM does, but it's only $200 all said and done. It comes with all the brackets. It comes with everything you need. It comes with the programming cable for $200.
Good screen.
It's removable. You can put the screen and the body separate of each other. And that one is the one I always recommend to people as an introduction, hard mounted radio into their vehicle, that TYT7800. It comes locked now. The FCC throttled down on them. So it comes locked, but it's very easy to unlock with Chirp software. So that TYT7800, $200, great radio. It just doesn't have the same receive sensitivity as the ICOM does, and the speaker in it sucks. So you'll definitely want to get an external speaker for
it. As we said earlier, you pretty much want an external speaker.
You're probably going to want one anyways. I would highly recommend them. They are super nice to have.
Yeah, I got one. It's actually powered. The speaker is powered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's even louder because Bobcat is not quiet.
No, he's not.
Especially if you're on the freeway with doors on, windows up, it's mm-hmm. still loud. And mm-hmm. so, I wanted to get some of the, because I can always turn the radio down.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you can only turn the radio up so much.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So, that's my feedback. I would say if you're looking for an introduction radio and you're looking at spending, you don't want to spend more than $200-$250, check out that TYT.
Does the TYT do APRS?
It does not.
Okay.
No. But it does everything else. It's got knobs. It's got a decent contrast display. It's an orange background with black lettering. It's not as nice as the white background with black lettering as the ICOM. But it's a lot less expensive than the ICOM and does everything the ICOM does. So, just the ICOM is a little bit nicer quality, a little bit better speaker quality, a little bit better receive sensitivity. And it, in my opinion, it's a bigger screen than the TYT. So it's a little easier to look at, quick glimpse, and know what's going on the trail. Mm-hmm. So if you're planning on being like me and playing with your radio all the time while you're on the trail, the ICOM is a better option. If you're more like Jimmy and you just want to set it and have it go and you're just using it to, listen in on the local repeater here and there and talk to your group, then that TYT is a phenomenal option for everything, that all the functions it has. If you want APRS as well, look at the FTM400. Phenomenal radio. I would say I did get to play around with the new 300. It's cool in functions, but the screen is magnificently tiny on it. It's smaller than the Baofeng 25 watt radios.
Oh my gosh.
It's a horrendously small screen. You cannot tell what's going on while you're bouncing around in a vehicle with that thing.
Yeah.
So I'd say try and stay away from the 300, but the 400, phenomenal radio with everything in it the way it is. Some people might say, well, the 5100 from ICOM is a great radio, touchscreen, very similar to the Yaesu F400, but the 5100 does not do APRS. It does DPRS, which is digital packet reporting system. And so it digital and APRS, DPRS and APRS are two different protocols. They can't talk to each other.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that's why it's kind of one of those things. The digital one is great because you can send the signals through digital repeaters, DMR repeaters. The problem with that is there's not enough digital repeaters out in off-roading areas yet to warrant me recommending off-roaders to switch over to digital radios and digital communications yet.
Right.
It's coming though. I would say another 5 to 10 years, we're going to have a lot more digital radios out in off-roading areas.
Sure.
But right now in cities, digital radios, they're out there. Absolutely. They're there. But out in the mountains, in the woods, off-grid areas, analog is still the prevalent method of communications out there.
So if they said they wanted APRS, mm-hmm. So really the only option that you said was the FTM400.
From that group, yes.
Yeah.
So,
Let me just say that one of the things I do out on the trail is I have the FTM400 set up for APRS on one of the channels. Mm-hmm. The second channel, I have the Simplex set up on for our group communications. Mm-hmm. Then I have a handheld that I usually have in the rig set up to hit the repeater.
The local repeater that covers the area.
So I can listen in on that. And then the second channel I have set up for the Simplex as well.
Okay.
Because then if I leave the rig, I have the Simplex that I can...
You can take it with you, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're good.
Or if the assistant hops out, she can take the handheld and she can communicate to me. So I am still running, I'm still using my handheld, as a version of communication. But the mobile radio is the primary
one
for Simplex, and APRS. It's not the repeater. Mm-hmm. Unless something big comes through and I need to get out.
Yeah.
And I'll switch one of them over.
Yep. I'm a big fan. I've mentioned this before and you know it. And you've now kind of seen the merits of doing it. And having the local repeater that covers your local area up at the same time as your Simplex channel so that you can listen to both. You know what's going on with your group and you know what's going on in the local area in case there's any emergencies. In order to run now APRS, that's three channels.
Yep.
You need to be running
exactly
simultaneously.
You're not really hearing the APRS. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have that whole channel muted on my radio because I don't want the dings coming through.
Yeah.
They'll still pop up on the screen, but it is taking a channel away. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's one thing to consider. If you're looking at running APRS, you will not be able to do both of the other channels, the local repeater and your group Simplex channel.
Right.
So that means you need a second radio. And the best way to do that is what you do is with a handheld radio. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're crazy, then you can get another mobile radio.
Yeah.
And kind of have this dual mobile radio set up in your rig. So now that kind of leads a little bit into another radio option.
Okay.
And this question came from Zach. So Zach, hello. Hey, Zach. Thank you for writing in asking this question. And he says, hey, been listening to the podcast since around February and I'm enjoying the content. Keep it up. You have convinced me and a buddy to get our technician licenses and start using ham for trail communications. Yes.
Cool.
That's my goal. We both already have UV5R Baofengs, but are wanting to get some mobile radio setups in our rigs. One's a 1-ton SAST 4th-gen 4Runner and 3rd-gen 4Runner. So they're both 1-ton solid axle.
Are they sure they're 1-tons?
There's no such thing as 1-tons. But shots fired. I have been researching radios but can't decide what I would like to use. The VCG, the Vero VRN7500 is at the top of my list. But along with that, I would plan on getting an Android head unit in my rig so that the controls are in plain sight. This would eliminate the extra screen for the radio and keep the cab in my 4Runner a bit less cluttered. I thought I remember you talking about this radio on one of your episodes, but haven't been able to find it. The episode. The other radio I was considering is the TYT7800. Any input would be much appreciated. P.S. I would be more than willing to hide some pucks for you guys in northern Utah. If you guys need anything on your way through Salt Lake, let me know.
Cool.
So thanks, Zach. We might actually hit you up and drop off a couple pucks to you. We'll see. But yeah, this is now the other option of radios that I like to recommend. And I've been using this radio now, the Vero VRN7500 for... yeah, a few months.
Okay.
So far.
And which one is that?
That's the Bluetooth radio.
Okay.
So it is completely 100% controlled. There's no head unit for it. There's no removable head unit to put on your dashboard anywhere.
Right.
It's completely controlled through an Android device.
Interesting.
So, and it's controlled, yeah. And the Android device runs all the controls to the radio via Bluetooth. So you control the radio by tapping buttons on the screen of your phone,
yeah,
and using your phone's microphone, or there's a built-in microphone you can get for it, or they have a couple of now Bluetooth microphone options, which are pretty cool.
Can you use an old cell phone?
Absolutely. Yep.
That'd be interesting.
All it needs is Bluetooth.
Cool.
And the ability to download the free app off of the Google Play Store.
Nice.
So I'm a big fan of this radio. It's a really cool platform. It is extremely versatile in what it can do, and the way it functions is great, great for off-roaders, because a lot of us will have our phones on us because we're taking pictures on the trail, or mm-hmm. we're running music off of our phones, or we have a tablet with us to run mapping software off of.
Yeah.
You can set up Android Auto and run it to a head unit in your brand new Jeep or Bronco or something.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really cool abilities here. And it's all software ran. So the company can make updates to it and roll out the updates to the app on your phone. That then updates the radio. Really, the radio itself is nothing special. It is a basic transmitter and receiver for 2 meters and 70 centimeters.
Okay.
For VHF and UHF. All the magic is done on your phone.
That's cool. That's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm. So that means now whatever your phone can do is really the limits of the radio. And whatever you can come up with software-wise, the company can come up with software-wise, is the limits of the radio.
Okay.
So this radio can do APRS. There's a whole APRS platform built into the app.
Yeah,
and
because your cell phone has GPS on it.
Mm-hmm, your cell phone has a GPS receiver built into it. And what's cool is the company has taken open source maps and embedded it into the software. So it will automatically take your APRS signal and incoming APRS signals that the radio receives and pops them and populates them on open maps.
Wow.
On your phone. So
that's nice.
They just
also... So if I'm running Gaia,
mm-hmm.
it would populate it on that?
No.
Okay.
The mapping software is built into its own app.
Its own app.
But they just now, as of this last weekend, released offline maps.
Mm.
So you can download maps offline and run all your APRS stuff on offline maps.
Nice.
Typically, open use maps, though, do not have off-roading trails on them. Mm-hmm. They're typically streets and roads.
Sure.
But you can still kind of see where you are. A lot of the maps do have a lot of the lakes and creeks nearby. So it still gives you a reference point.
Okay.
And what this is really, really good for
but is... But not like their software has the off-road trails on it either.
Gaia? What do you mean?
Well, but you said I couldn't use Gaia. If correct. I download the map off of Gaia, right? And it would then be able to put the APRS onto that map.
No. I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to see what their license allows you to download and upload into their app.
Okay. But you also said that they have their own maps.
Yeah, they just use open use maps, open source
maps.
And
those don't have the off-road trails on
them. Most of them don't, yeah. There's, the bigger trails like Imogen Pass or Telluride or the Rubicon. I think the Rubicon might be on it. I don't know. Bigger trails... Sure. That are like county roads kind of thing. Those will probably be on open use maps. But smaller trails like Barrett Lake or Strawberry Pass or something like that, probably not Fort Ice. So what this is really, really cool and used for is if you have multiple people in your group running APRS, you can keep track of each other on your way out to a trail.
Right.
You don't have to go 50 miles on a freeway anymore, 50 miles per hour on a freeway. You can just split up and take off and all meet up at the trail and know where the straggler with the 22RE coming up the hill is at.
Hey,
shots fired. You did 85 in Bobcat. I'm impressed.
Downhill.
Downhill, yeah. Downhill. Yeah. So there are some bugs with the radio that need to be fixed in order to make APRS very usable. Like the messaging in APRS is completely not usable. Do not message people using this radio and using APRS. Because in APRS protocol, there's you send a message and the person's receiving device sends a message back saying, I received your message. Otherwise, the sending device will keep sending the message over and over again until it receives a receive notification.
Right.
And this radio does not send a receive notification when it receives APRS messages.
Oh, interesting.
So if you, and it doesn't acknowledge received notifications.
Right.
So if you send out a message,
it's going to keep sending.
It's just going to keep sending over and over. And then you send another message. Now it's sending two messages over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Send a third message because you're responding. You're having a conversation with that person. Yeah. Now you have three messages sending over and over and over again. And it doesn't shut it off. You have to literally shut off the radio and reboot the radio.
Oh, wow.
So,
they need to fix that.
They need to fix that. And that's a big complaint. And the company is actually pretty cool. There's a Facebook group page set up for people that buy this radio and they can get customer service questions answered. And the community there has a ton of like manuals and files that you can download in the group to explain how to set up your APRS, how to set up talking on the radio, how to set up your memory channels, etc. Cool. Because the radio and the app, the radio is very basic. It's very easy to use because you're using it all through the app. You have to understand how the app works. And the company, the app is not streamlined user-friendly. It does take a while to figure out how to use the app because there's like 8 different settings pages. And like for APRS, there's 3 different settings pages for APRS.
Oh my gosh.
Rather than having all the settings on one settings page for APRS, there's like 3 different pages. And it's like that for everything.
Okay.
The memory channels page, there's 3 different ways to access different memory channel pages. And so it's just a very cluttered app that needs to be cleaned up. It's like they implement an idea, and then when they come up with a new idea to add to it, they just kind of add it on top and keep adding on top rather than streamlining the implementations.
Yes.
So
sounds like they need a UI UX person.
Yes, absolutely they do. So the app, not intuitive. It takes a while to figure out and get used to, but once you figure it out, pretty fucking cool radio. You can talk and use the radio from your phone. So what's really cool about this is at nighttime when you're at camp sitting around a campfire, you can talk on the local repeater by having your phone Bluetoothed to your vehicle as long as you're within, and it works within about 100 feet.
Okay.
A line of sight, open air.
Nice.
About 100 feet. So you can take your phone.
Yeah. So instead of sitting around the campfire with a handheld, you're sitting around the campfire with your cell phone that's connected to a 50 water.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you're connected to a 50 water instead of a 5 or 8 watt handheld around a campfire. So you can do that. You can send text message because of APRS. Once the messaging gets fixed,
yeah,
you can send text messages via APRS. So you can be sitting around the campfire and texting your loved one back at home through the APRS. You can be laying in your tent, getting ready for bed, and talk to your loved one over the local repeater. Yep. You can be laying in your tent, talking over text messaging through APRS. So it's a really cool versatility that you get now having everything controlled Bluetooth from your phone. There's just still a lot of cleaning up that needs to be done to the app and the software, the UI UX side of it. But the possibilities, the potential for this radio, I think are phenomenal.
Cool.
And it's only $190.
Wow. Okay.
So there's the next big selling point, right?
Right.
It's less than half the price, 30% of the price of an FTM 400 from Yaesu, half the price of your finished product on the ICOM radio, and about the same price as the TYT 7800.
But there's a learning curve.
There's a big learning curve to it, yep.
So if you wanted a radio just to connect with, simple connections, hook the antenna up, ready, set, go, this is not that answer.
This is not that answer, exactly.
But if you want some of the cool new, possibly future of where radios is going, you know, and are willing to do a little legwork, this is a great option.
And willing to be, you're almost, I mean, as a user of this radio, if you get involved with that community on Facebook page too, you're almost like a beta tester.
Yeah.
Or an alpha tester, not an alpha, you're a beta tester really, because the company is on that group. They do take the group's feedback into consideration as to what they roll out implementing next on the app.
That's cool.
So it's kind of cool to be a part of something and be able to give feedback, and the company's like, oh yeah, we'll actually look into that and implement that.
Yeah. Or you're like, I'm always running into this issue when I do XYZ. And okay, we'll figure out why that's happening. Mm-hmm.
Or the community bands together and finds out ways to work around that problem with the app itself. Mm-hmm. Like my biggest issue with the whole thing before was that you cannot program the radio with a spreadsheet. You have to manually type in every single program through the face of your phone. So it's like tapping on a phone. It's a lot easier than having to go through nested menus on a radio, but you still have to do each one individually. Mm-hmm. Somebody figured out how to upload all your programming into a Google Docs and then how to get the app
to read the
Google Doc.
Cool.
So I'm like, awesome. That's fixed now. That was my biggest issue with the radio. My next biggest issue is that the APRS messaging completely unusable. But other than that, there's a couple of bugs, which I think is happening because of my phone, not necessarily because of the radio. And I'm trying to work it out with the community and the company. But so far for $190-$200, it's a no brainer if you want something with APRS and you're willing to put in the work to learn it.
Yeah.
So
I think this might, I think I've said it before, but I think this is going to be the answer for Charlotte.
I think this is going to, this is what I'm going to be putting in the Ford as well.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Cool.
So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Good info.
Yeah. And I'm curious because I have my order officially submitted, I think, for my Bronco.
Oh, okay.
And so the new Bronco systems are supposed to be coming with Google Android, because Google's going to be providing the operating systems for Ford moving forward. So I think all the new Broncos are coming with the new Google operating system. I would need to confirm that. But if it is, then obviously it's going to work very well with Android stuff. So I might be able to just run this radio off of the Android Auto, essentially the center console on the Bronco. The
dash, yeah. That'd be interesting if you could download the app straight to the Bronco.
Exactly. Huh. Right?
That'd be badass.
So yeah,
I wonder if it would be able to overlay it on their maps.
That'd be a great question. I think the company in their app, the radio company, uses open Google Maps.
Okay.
Open source Google Maps for their maps. So if it can work on their app, I don't know why it wouldn't be able to work and overlay it on Google Maps.
What would be cool to see is if you could download the map or an area from Gaia and then move that as a photo or, the map and then use that as the open source map.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I need to look into that because, like I said, they just did the offline maps like a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked into seeing how they work, what maps you can choose to use as your map, your downloaded map. I'll be looking into that and we'll report back. But
because that'd be cool, because then the trail would actually be there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. So
nice.
Yeah, that's the radio feedback for Zach and Alex and anybody else out there who's, you know, contemplating looking into some hardwired radios for their rigs.
Excellent. So, yeah, and if you guys want more radio talk with Tyler.
Radio talk with Tyler?
Yeah, we can figure out something fun there.
Telecommunication talk with Tyler?
Yeah.
Okay.
Write in. Ask us questions. We're, we're here for you guys. You can write in and get a hold of us, Jimmy or Tyler at snailtrail4x4.com. You can write Tyler at 4x4 Toyota Tyler on Instagram, and you can get a hold of me at snailtrail4x4.
Yeah. And if you guys want to be able to call us and just leave us a message and say whatever the hell you want, we will air it within reason. Maybe, yeah. Within reason. Then let us know about that, and we'll set up a Google Voice number for you guys to call in and ask your questions rather than having to email, or just another, I think, another fun little aspect.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think we should do that.
Cool. All right, man. Do you got any final words for everybody?
Walkie talkie.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling.
I got one for you.
You do?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite memories of a kid was when my brother used to push me when I laid inside of a tire and we would roll down the hill.
Okay.
Those are good years.
See, that was a good one.